Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Good morning, and welcome to the Brown Briefly. It is Tuesday, March 1st, 2022, and that was the voice of Brian Brown, the founder of the Brown Briefly. He set the tone for our progressive radio program as one of civil discourse, humor, integrity, and intellectual curiosity. We have five Brieflies, maybe, perhaps only four. I see one not showing up quite yet. Oh, he's there. Yay. We have five Brieflies gathered today for our discussions. First, I'd like to welcome our sound engineer, Captain of the Airways, Truman O'Brien. Good morning, Truman.
Good morning. I'm kind of out of camera here, but that's okay.
Okay. Well, I'll
Yeah, we got eye contact. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Good.
Thank you, Truman. We appreciate it.
Good. Good, good.
Your hand signals make it on.
There you go.
I'd also like to welcome Lynn Kerrigan here in the Gene Bosch Studios, downtown Vachon Island. Musician, poet, former UW professor, bicoastal transplant, and alter ego Athena, goddess Athena. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning. I'm a happy camper here today on Mardi Gras. I like to celebrate all holidays possible, especially the ones that involve drinking.
Especially daytime drinking on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Not many fall in that category.
That's right.
Well, our listeners can't see, so I'll describe what Lynn is wearing and what she's passed around. Truman is wearing bright golden beads. I've got silver beads that she's brought for us, and she herself is wearing a mask and a fabulous attire. So it's a celebratory mood here at the
anything to keep
studio.
Us amused during these scary days.
All right. Also joining us this morning, we have Bruce Hallman, historian, president of Vachon Maury Island Historical Society, and fondly known here at the Briefly as the Guardian of the Galaxy. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
It's nice to see you. And sitting next to you on the Zoom camera is our own Kevin Jones, Clark Kent impersonator, citizen activist, and leader of Indivisible Vachon. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. Good morning. On my Zoom, I'm sandwiched between the arc of history and the party happening at the bottom.
That's the funny thing about
Lynn,
Zoom.
I think you're going to set a whole new meaning to mask wearing in the time of pandemic.
That's true.
That's right. I admired the Middle Ages mask. You know, they at least look like exotic birds and things like that.
Right, right. Yes, unfortunately, they did primarily because of the use of feathers, which also led to the extinction of many of those exotic birds. But hey, let's not go there this early in the show. Signs of spring. First I should introduce myself. I'm Gail Kellner. I'm poet, artist, writer, former educator, and author of the soon-to-be-released novel, Hope, a History of the Future, in which I envision a peaceful, just, verdant world that could arise out of today's crises. And I'm your host for today's program. Signs of spring. So, it is not officially spring yet. I do know that. We still have to wait another 21 days until the equinox. But I'm known to be a little impatient, and I always cheat and consider March 1st the first day of unofficial start of spring, because, you know, it's a spring month. So what signs of spring have the Briefly seen on the island? Go ahead, Kevin. I'm gonna call on you right out, because I know you're a close watcher of the nature around your home.
Well, you know, the thing that's most on mind right now is just those spring-like rains that we had yesterday. I'm waiting now for the yin yang effect of the sunshine and the blue skies to come along, but you know, it is only the 1st of March, so I suppose we have to be realistic, and in most years we're gonna have to have another couple of months at least after enjoying some of the beautiful weather that often hits in February. You know, we perhaps have the doldrums, but it's dry today, so I'm happy about that.
You know, that's so true. Anyone who's lived in the Northwest long will have noted that every month has its own character, and February is typically a month of equilibrium. We have many clear, quiet days, even warm sometimes. And then March, I call it the month of clouds, so it in comes the winds and the rains, and it tends to be blustery. How about you, Bruce? What's spring like down there in Ellisport?
Well, the crocuses are up, daffodils are sticking their heads up. You know, all the bulbs are starting to emerge from under the leaf litter. But I've been moving around the island the past couple of weeks, working on a project, and this, a shout out for anybody that knows of any murals on Vashon Island. I'm collecting photographs and locations for potentially a museum tour of island murals. And it's just amazing how many there are out there, some inside, but mostly outside on buildings. And of course, most of you are familiar with Tom Tighe mural on the phone company building at the intersection. I guess
204th.
South Center, 204th, yeah, 204th intersection. But there, Tom actually did 5 different murals around the island. There's theater murals, there's just lots of them. So if anybody knows of a mural, let me know and we'll add it to the list. But getting out looking for murals around the island, you see the signs of spring. You know, buds are on the trees, you know, things are emerging from the ground. So even though it rained, you know, heartily the last 2 days, you know, it's turned the corner.
Yes, I couldn't agree. Lynn?
I just have a question for Bruce. Bruce, are you going to go inside and look, for example, in the schools where that's where I've got my first idea of murals? And Vashon Allied Arts, VCA has a big mural in their lobby. Lots of wonderful ones around. Yep.
Ortiz has one. Bishops used to have one. Yeah. K2 has a huge photo mural of K2. And it's amazing.
Yeah, plus, the theater.
All the outdoor. Yeah, of course, the Jack Tabor theater murals. And then the Nancy Cole Augusta mural that used to be on the back of the movie theater that we're trying to restore. So there's just tons of murals around the island.
Great.
And
project.
For those of you poets, you know, Gail and Lynn, you might be interested. There's a fantastic Pablo Neruda mural on the back of the garage at the north end that's made out of words from his poetry.
Oh, fabulous.
The artist Jesse Johnson put it together using typeface, basically, and strands of poetry from Pablo Neruda to create a portrait of the poet. So it's pretty amazing what's out there.
Oh, that's great. Go ahead, Trent.
Yeah, Bruce, since you have a boat, I discovered a mural that is only visible from a boat. Right. Do you know what I'm talking about, the one on the south end of Maury?
Guernica.
Yes, Guernica. Yes. Okay, I didn't know if you knew about that, but that's a fabulous one.
Okay. Yes, somebody on the south end of Maury Island on a concrete retaining wall has reproduced the painting Guernica.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, well, they've modified it a bit, but yeah.
Well, yeah, right. it's Vashon, right?
It is.
Yeah. All right, Lynn.
Well, spring is indeed dominated by rain right now, and I was just happy to wake up this morning seeing that it had calmed down a little bit. I think I live down by the beach, and I've been walking out there watching what happens at KVI in the spring, watching the wildlife down at the harbor. Just been a beautiful few days, even if it's been, you know, drenched. That's okay with me.
One of the things that I noted was in the last few days is when I'm waking up in the morning, it's the sound of birds. And so we're coming into the season of the what's sometimes called the dawn choir, where the birds sing in the morning, and that is always one of my favorite parts of spring, as well as the flowering in my yard of the forsythia, which is one of the first big bushes that break out into the yellow blooms. All right. Well, thank you for sharing that. Truman, did you have anything you wanted to share?
Oh, you know, my house is surrounded by tall trees. And so consequently, I don't get quite as much sun as some other parts of the island. So my daffodils are always really late. But they're poking up, and they haven't popped out yet. But they're getting there. But the other day I was out at the airport, and I noticed there were robins everywhere. And I know we have, you know, some resident robins, but these guys have obviously come up from the south, and they were everywhere.
Yeah, they flock this time of year and move up into the more northern areas as the snow and whatnot recedes to the north. Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, I found out something about robins I didn't know, that they have apparently two nestings per year. Oh. And I'm not sure how often that happens amongst birds, but we were wondering last spring why we had so many robins around. And so we started to look into that and found they nest at least twice a year for the average robin.
Oh, that's lovely. Every once in a while, I'll find their little blue eggs, you know, usually hatched already, but a portion of them broken open. Bruce, are you wanting to say something? I'm seeing your hand in the corner there, or perhaps you're just stretching your fingers. Doing some morning exercise. Mm-hmm. Truman. Exactly. I wanted to get your thoughts on the issue with the park district and the school district. For years, they cooperated on the use of our shared athletic fields, and that may be coming to an end, or at least a transition. Can you tell us more about that and your thoughts are?
I was a park commissioner at the time that we began the whole commons agreement. In fact, it took us a while to come up with a name for it. Bill Ameling was one of the primary architects of that agreement. But when we voted raise the money to build a new school here on the island, one of the things that the school district promised the island was that if we come up with the money to build this new school, they would make all of those facilities available to the citizens of the island to use in non-school time. And at the time they were having a heck of a time trying to figure out how to schedule everything, because it would require pretty much a full-time person to do that. And so I think Bill is the one who came up with the idea, well, hey, you know, the park district, that's what we do. And so why don't we take that on? One of the big issues that we had was paying them a fee to help cover that. And one of the things that we attempted to do was come up with an incremental fee that would reflect the additional usage that after hours use would entail. And oh my gosh, we fought over that for months, trying to come up with an equitable way of addressing that. And we never could, to be perfectly honest. We could not figure out how to do a percentage of the power usage or any of those things that we looked at. So it was finally just decided that we would just pay them a flat fee. Mm. And that's what finally settled upon.
When you say we, you're referring to the park district and to the school district.
That is correct. The park district paying to the school district a fee to cover the incremental cost of using those facilities in non-school hours. Mm-hmm. And so we hit upon that agreement. Of course, we also moved into the VES fields up at the Vashon Elementary. We looked at trying to develop the building that was there. In fact, both of those buildings, the one that the outdoor gym with the old building there, the UMO was one of the users of that. And we went around and around and around trying to work out something to make it safe and usable. And of course, as you all know, it eventually was torn down, that and the old school building itself.
Right.
And then, of course, we also moved into the Burton School, where we put in the skate park, and that was again the park district doing that in cooperation with the school district to be able to use that. So my thoughts now is if you know, anytime you get new board members or new people coming in, they always look at what everyone has done before and say, oh my gosh, we can do much better than that. Well, I hate to tell you, folks, but you can't. And if the school district wants to take on the challenge of scheduling all of that, they have two choices. They can either say, we're not going to provide facilities to the public anymore, which goes against what the whole fundraising thing was about, or they can say, we're going to take on the scheduling. And if so, they're talking about hiring an outside firm to do that. It's going to cost a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And so the citizens of Vashon could be saying, well, that means the park district isn't going to pay them anymore. That's a good thing. Yeah, well, guess who's going to be paying them? That's the users. And so that gets to be the argument. Do we make this a fully funded situation? Well, the park district does also charge for facilities, but it's just a nominal fee. I mean, there's very, very little paid. And believe me, if you don't have the money to pay, you still get to use the stuff. If this outside company takes over, that will no longer be the case. And the fees will go up no matter what. And I think the island will end up paying quite a bit more than what they're paying now. So anyway, that's my opinion.
You know, interesting to hear this. And Truman, I encourage you to write this down and maybe an op-ed piece in the Beachcomber for us, because sometimes I think we don't know the history and the background enough. And I think it is so wonderful to have a community where we do share resources. We all are paying in one form or another, both to the school district and to the park district. Right. So having access to those things is one of those ways that's where we can increase the use of what we have, and that helps us not have to cut down more forests or use more resources to water grass because we're sharing what we have. So I hope you write about that. Do any of the other Briefleys have any thoughts? Lynn, go ahead.
I agree. And Truman, thank you so much for bringing us up to date on that. It's so hard to really know the backstories of all of these situations. And I think what I was struck by as you were talking is you guys went to some very creative lengths to do some partnering among the community to solve a problem. And I think that's the direction we need to be going in, not running from.
Right. And I have to tell you, we did query other park districts and other municipalities to figure out what they did. And of course, we are really pretty unique here.
Yeah.
Since we don't have no city government or any of that sort of thing. Since we're an unincorporated King County. You know, the Park District is one of the few government entities that exist here on the island that can represent folks. Mm-hmm. And the Park District covered a whole lot of areas that was really unique, I think, to this island. So anyway, there we go.
Thank you for that. Kevin, go ahead.
Well, I certainly say this is a key example of how knowing the history of something helps inform our future decisions. The partnership to me seemed like a really valuable asset to the community. It's not super clear to me why the school district is seeking to choose a different course forward, but I do hope that they will see the value of community and working together and preserve this arrangement. Make good sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right.
Follow the money.
Follow the money.
Isn't that always the case? Isn't that always the case? Well, the governor announced about sometime, I guess it was last week or just before, the upcoming end of our mask mandates on 3/21. And I understand this CDC recently came out with a recommendation that it's time to lift that as well.
And that's been modified now. It's the 11th. The date has been moved to the 11th. It's 10 days earlier.
That's not too far out and just about 10 days from now.
Correct.
What are each of you looking forward to the most? And do you have any worries about this change? Any thoughts on that? Go ahead.
Well, I can throw one out. I went to this past weekend on Sunday. I went out to the Northwest Aviation Trade Show and Conference that was over at the fairgrounds of Puyallup. And of course, they had mask required on the door and everything, and so we put on our mask and we got in. And when we got in, there was maybe 10% of the people wearing masks. No one else. None of the folks in the booths, or very few of them were, and very few of the participants. And so one of us kept his mask on and one didn't. And I can tell you, it felt really liberating to walk around and actually be able to not fog your glasses and be able to see people's faces. And it was really delightful. So
Yes, go ahead, Lynn.
You know, I am with you about all of that, the way it feels to kind of just be able to see people and smile with your whole face and be able to understand what people are saying. I think that's great. But I am very concerned about us declaring the pandemic over and deciding on an economic and social basis that we are done with the mask restrictions. And I'm on the side of extremely cautious, and I will keep wearing my mask for a long time. And in fact, the CDC has now made comments much like this, saying that the opening up of the mask mandates has not been a medical decision, it's been an economic and a social decision. And the CDC is worried also. They chose not to kind of bucket, but they're saying everybody really needs to look at their own factors in their communities, immunity factors, and all of these, you know, various things to make the best decisions they can individually, because it's been so disruptive, I guess, to have the mask mandate. So I personally am sorrowful that we can't decide to be healthy based on health guidelines as opposed to other factors.
Bruce, I liked your comment a couple of weeks ago when you were saying that the pandemic is over when the people decide it's over. And it goes from being a pandemic to an endemic, you know, that it's just going to be with us no matter what. So anyway, I find that interesting historical perspective.
Yeah, and I think that's what happened in 1919 with the Spanish flu. That's certainly what we see going on right now. And I don't think, I mean, I think what we'll see in the United States among those who are concerned and those who have a community spirit is many of us will continue to wear masks for a long time, particularly in tight social situations, you know, outside sports events, you know, those kind of things. Even in well-ventilated spaces, less of an issue. But when you're in small rooms with groups of people, large groups of people, I think a lot of folks who are older and who are concerned about their friends and their community and their families will continue to wear masks. We're going to look much more like Asian countries in the future than we do right now in terms of mask wearing.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I know for me personally, I look forward to not having my glasses fogged up constantly. That's probably my number one difficulty. And oddly, although my ears aren't covered, I don't seem to be able to hear very well with the mask on. And I don't know that I can represent the views of the GOP or the right, but I know that I do listen. And one thing I have heard is that they feel that it's an individual choice and that one should take responsibility for their own health, their own choices. So if you're someone who has health concerns, then it's your responsibility to mask and not necessarily a group responsibility. It's a very different view than is generally held on the left, but it is interesting that we're moving in that particular direction right now. Kevin, do you want to round us out with any final thoughts on the mask, the lifting of the mask mandate?
Well, I'm definitely with Lynn. I think that, you know, it's all about assessing personal risk, and that's much harder than it sounds on the surface. Of course, understanding the complexities of your own physiology, the risks that you might have with underlying health conditions, and the guidance that is ever changing with, you know, this variant of coronavirus, which is novel and not well known, but those are good watchwords. And that means if you feel that you might have a health risk, to, you know, be on the side of, I hate to say on the conservative side, but you know what I mean? Wear a mask if in doubt.
Truman, you have.
Yeah, you know, this is kind of left field here, but I just recently completed a course for renewing my certified flight instructor certificate. And one of the areas that the FAA has been moving toward, actually for several years now, is one of risk management. And they're bringing that into all of their training and all of their procedures and everything that they do, where they really look at the risks that are involved in any particular activity And I think that's where we're at with this. You know, you this is risk management. You have to look at what risk you're approaching and how to manage that risk. So anyway, just a different mentality, I think.
Go ahead, Lynn.
Well, I was just going to add that the difference to me in that, Truman, is that risk management is often looking at, you know, your own risk or that situation's risk. And right. This is a sort of a public health risk.
Yeah,
other
I
people
agree.
Are
I agree.
Involved. And so it's a little more complex.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree.
Kev?
Hey, I was going to say, Truman, be careful. They're going to turn you all into GDEs.
Yeah,
into what?
It.
That's gall darn engineers.
Exactly. I knew that's what that was.
Other terms for G&D, but the turf of engineering is all about risk management.
That's right. That's right.
Trying to develop
and thank gosh for it.
It goes into service and people use it. They interact with it. And, you know, sometimes those things are risky, all the way from paint to airplanes.
There you go. That's right.
All right. Well, thank you all. In national news over the last week or two, we saw a win for the Sandy Hook parents. They arrived at a settlement with the maker of the semi-automatic gun that contributed to the slaughtering of 20 first graders and 6 faculty members. I am still outraged and unable to understand how that event didn't immediately result in gun control measures. Bruce, can you start us off with what is the background history on the gun rights movement?
Sure, yeah. Just, I mean, the whole gun rights movement goes back to the Second Amendment. And I think a careful reading of the Second Amendment, and it's very short, it's one sentence, says basically a well-regulated militia, comma, being necessary for to the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, comma, shall not be infringed. Very simple. Two clauses, two very radically different interpretations. The first is based around the well-regulated militia, and it's essentially known as the collective rights theory, you know, that it only restricts Congress from legislating away a state's rights to self-defense. You know, under the collective rights theory of the Second Amendment, you know, citizens do not have an individual right to possess guns, and that local, state, and federal legislative bodies can possess the authority to regulate firearms without implicating a constitutional right. So that's one side of the argument. And that was upheld by the Supreme Court in a 1939 decision in which the Supreme Court ruled that banning sawed-off shotguns was legal. And that sort of began to mobilize the guns rights movement in the United States, because the other interpretation of the First Amendment is the
Second
right,
Amendment. Yeah.
Second Amendment is the right of people to keep and bear arms, which is the individual rights theory. And the argument there is it creates an individual constitutional right to possess firearms, you know, and it restricts legislative bodies, not only national, but state and local, from prohibiting firearm possessions. And that, that second interpretation wasn't the dominant interpretation until by the courts until 2008 and then 2010, when two cases came before the Supreme Court, both decided by narrow margins of 5-4, that put the emphasis on the individual rights rather than on the collective rights part of the Second Amendment. And it's an interesting sort of thing. I used to teach in the summer programs for international students, young women students from the North Africa, the Middle East, South Asia. And one of the things we would do is an exercise on sort of constitutional rights and sort of the Bill of Rights. And when you take any one of them, you look at each Bill of Rights has multiple kinds of things. I use the First Amendment. The right to speech, the right to a free press, you know what, and you ask people to prioritize them. And it's a very interesting exercise to go through. And when you look at the Second Amendment, you have two very different sort of legal interpretations. One is individual, one is collective. And how do you prioritize them? And right now, and largely because of the NRA and its pressure on legislatures and on courts, and bringing cases have swung basically the courts in the United States into the second or individual rights interpretation rather than the collective rights. But the collective rights interpretation held for 80 years.
Interesting. Thank you for that, Lynn. Truman.
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say I looked into a little more recent background, which sort of got to a little bit of the dilemmas that you raise over time, Bruce, because I read back to 2005 where there was a challenge to Remington that basically said they were not liable. They were immune from the actions of the people that used their firearms. However, the people from Sandy Hook, these nine families that were suing, actually went then on a different tack. And in 2019, they were allowed by the Supreme Court to go forward with another challenge to Remington based on wrongful death. And their argument was a little bit different. It didn't have to do with these people shouldn't have been shot and killed. It had to do with the fact that these weapons, this weapon that Remington manufactured is a Bushmaster brand, and apparently the manufacturer of the Colt M16 that was used during the Vietnam War ran out. And so it allowed other manufacturers to start making these new high-powered assault weapons without too much oversight. And so what has happened is that the Sandy Hook families marketed it as, I'm sorry, Gail, you're going to have to tell me what you mean.
You got to keep in front of the mic.
Stay in front of the mic.
Okay, sorry, thanks. Thanks. Every time you motioned at me, I looked toward you.
Which is what you wanted. So.
Well, let me say this, though, because you got me right at the point of my conversation, which is that the Remington was said to have marketed this military-style weapon to families, and that's what they got them on. And on February 15th, that lawsuit went forward, and Remington settled for $73 million to be divided among these nine families because they couldn't beat that argument that they had been marketing it, this military-style weapon, to individuals, families within America. So it's a whole new ball game for gun rights or gun safety is to look at the intent of these weapons and what they were styled to use for and how they are being loosely marketed.
Thank you for that. Go ahead, Truman.
Well, I've been, I'm a gun owner and a gun advocate, but I've been really opposed to the military style weapons that you're describing as being completely out of, you know, beyond the pale. If you're going to go deer hunting, you certainly do not need a semi-automatic rifle that carries, you know, 19 rounds or whatever it is.
You'd only have sausage to collect off the ground.
Exactly. And if you can't, you know, if you can't do better than that, you shouldn't be out hunting. But what I was going to say is talk to the people of Ukraine today.
Yes, no kidding.
Don't you wish that, aren't they wishing that they all had and they are getting them. I mean, they're passing them out to everybody, you know. So, you know, it's a hard call. And I think that's the argument from the gun rights advocates is that you're not getting them to protect your family from an intruder. You're getting them to protect yourself from the government. I mean, that's their argument. Not sure that I can concur with it, but that's their argument anyway.
Mm-hmm. So. Right. And it is an interesting argument because and a little bit convoluted, not yours, but the thinking behind it, because of course there are many of them are very big supporters of the police and, you know, and things like that. And yet there seems to be a disconnect that the police are somehow not the government or something like that. And of course the concern among people who would like to see more regulation of guns is that they are used against individuals in massacres, in individual gun violence. And in fact, you know, we don't even really have all the numbers to report on how many people die of gun violence, but they have begun to to collect some of these. There was actually a law passed, and Bruce, you could probably speak to this, that didn't allow the CDC to collect that information. That's how repressed this issue has become. And of course, I always think, like, what's the difference between a semi-automatic weapon and being able to own a missile? We wouldn't let someone own a missile. So why can you own a semi-automatic weapon as a regular citizen? Kevin, your thoughts?
Yeah, of course, engineers can build their own missiles.
Exactly. It's not a veiled threat, Kevin.
I didn't direct that at anybody. In case you're wondering, when the Vashon Gun Safety Coalition formed, Spring Hecht led that for a while and handed out trigger locks on Vashon, including the Strawberry Festival. At the table, there were, anti-gun advocates and gun owners. And the unifying thread was gun safety. Mm-hmm. And the notion of gun safety it's not like the gun itself is safe if it just sits there in the cabinet, right? The issue of gun safety is who has access to the weapon. And it is, of course, will always be confusing to me why in the prevailing evidence that gun owners are very highly supportive of gun safety measures, but somehow their representatives are opposed to the idea of background checks and being able to, get involved when a person's situation changes, where they may no longer be a careful steward of a deadly force and may need to change their ownership as a consequence. This is always will be mysterious to me, and I hope eventually humans in our country will change their ways of thinking about that.
Yeah, go ahead, Truman, and then I'm going to move us on to the next.
Yeah, okay, just one thing that strikes me that you said there, Kevin, and, we take people's driver's license away from them, all the time. Mm-hmm. If somebody, if you have multiple DUIs or whatever, you lose your privilege to drive. What's the difference, to me?
Anyway. Yep, exactly.
Thank you for that. Well, as I'm sure most, if not all of our listeners know, if anyone's even glanced at a paper or turned on the news or the radio, they've heard of the Russian invasion of Ukraine that's gone on over the last week or so. Russia has a GNP that is smaller than Apple, smaller than the state of California, and yet it has really rather brazenly overrun Ukraine or is in the process of overrunning Ukraine. I'm curious, Kevin, can you open our discussion with your thoughts on the situation?
Happy to. And many thoughts there are. Let me try to be brief here in the spirit of the briefly. It's intriguing to me that Biden is now president and was a vice president in the administration, which included Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State, who Vladimir Putin was not getting along with at all, right? The attempted reset with Russia and all of so many things that led ultimately to Russia interfering in the election between Trump and Clinton and on the side of Trump. So, is there a longstanding, aggression towards this administration based on Biden's past service in office? We also know that Russia currently, or shortly, I think, will not head up the UN Security Council. We know that Putin didn't step on China's Olympics, being, friendly with Xi. We also know the frozen ground in that part of the world is necessary for the tanks to move. There's so many things that kind of cross my mind about coincidence and why now what led to the timing of this. But I will say that in my mind, a true global crisis for democracy would also see China saber rattling about Taiwan. And of course, we've heard that narrative. I haven't heard of China doing that saber rattling. So perhaps, during this test of the democracies by the autocrats, maybe the democracies will win and will emerge even stronger. Of course, in 6 hours or so from now, the State of the Union, I think in the face of inflation and shockingly low approval ratings, Biden is going to rest his case on the fact that he unified the democracies of the world in the face of autocratic aggression. He's restored the health of the nation as COVID cases are declining. And as we talked about earlier, masks are coming off and avoiding a really major economic crisis in the country here by passing American Rescue Plan, putting money in pockets, you know, raising half of the kids in the country out of poverty, and setting the stage for really unprecedented economic growth. So in the face of this crisis, of military crisis in Ukraine, you know, I think there's hope, and I think we need to put it in perspective. But clearly, I think Putin is making himself a global pariah, and I hope the democracies emerge and see the value of cooperation as opposed to conflict.
Go ahead, Truman.
What really struck me and is striking me is the rapidity from with which the West has coalesced this combined effort to say this is unacceptable. I mean, I am amazed that Sweden and Finland and all of the EU countries, I mean, around the world, people are just all of us coming together saying enough is enough. This is not right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, maybe it's a good thing that this has happened.
So. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Lynn.
I have to say, and this kind of a horror for me, even for myself, because I feel so exhausted by all these long wars and do not want to see that continue. However, I thought that when Biden said we're not going to go to war over this, we lost all negotiating ability. And I don't think it's enough that the world is standing by on sanctions. Maybe it will be. I hope to heaven it will be. But I am embarrassed to be watching this on CNN and sitting there with a blow-by-blow description of people being told to arm themselves and go out and build barricades in front of their houses. I think that's a humiliating defeat for the West not to go to war over this.
Wow. And yet that's an interesting thought. Of course, Ukraine is not part of NATO and so does not fall under that agreement. And once you have nuclear weapons involved, and of course Russia is a country with nuclear weapons, the stakes become very high when we start to engage. And I myself ask, do we want to get into another situation like that? And I would be concerned that it would be a losing situation. Kevin and Bruce, want to hear from you if you get a chance for next few minutes.
I totally, you know, I really sympathize, Lynn, with the feelings you're expressing, and it is frustrating for everybody. The balance that comes to mind for me is that what we're watching is aggression by a dictatorial autocratic government, and we are not appointed the police of the globe. You know, we are not bound by treaties, as Gail said. So while it's tempting to rise to the occasion and fight fire with fire, I think the other side of that coin is, you know, we need to recognize that sometimes you need to take some losses in order to demonstrate the type of global leadership that we all want to see, which is not using weapons of war to settle disputes. And so it is a very tough balance. So like I say, I totally agree with the frustration, but I also see that leadership is necessary in the kind of world that we want to live in. I think the leadership we're seeing is the one that's the right one right now from our administration.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, Bruce, do you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with Kevin. I mean, you have to remember, you have to think back to the 1956 Hungarian Revolution and to the Velvet Revolution in Czechoslovakia before it split up. Major world powers, and it's an argument whether Russia is a major world power anymore or not, but they certainly have nuclear weapons. There's spheres of influence. Did Russia go to war when we invaded Panama or when we invaded Grenada? And you know, you have to look at the context, and it's certainly a time in which you marshal the resources and you prepare for any response necessary. But to go to war at this point, my hope is that the Ukrainian people will turn this into another Afghanistan for Russia. And Putin, as a result, will fall out of power and be replaced by his generals.
I sure hope you're right.
All right, we're coming to the end of our program. little discussion as to who is hosting next week, but we have one of our hosts among us. One of us will step up to host next week, and we look forward to that. It will be Kevin. All right. And
actually, that will be Lynn.
Okay. That's why you raised your hand. Kevin is the keeper of the schedule.
All right. I will be on for March 8th.
I'd like to end our discussion today with a poem from John Donne. He lived in the late 1500s, early 1600s. The poem is For Whom the Bell Tolls, which, of course, for those of you who don't know, that was a common thing to do when someone died. You would ring the church bells. So no man is an island entire of itself. Each is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. Each man's death diminishes me, for I am involved in mankind. Therefore, never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee.